everybody. It's your girl, Joanna. I'm back with another episode of the Auntie Hour, and we're staying on the topic of perseverance. And I've got another exciting guest that I would like you all to meet. But before we do that, I just want to remind you that this is our time. So whatever else is going on in the room or whoever else you got there, you need to tell them that you have to listen to what we got for you right now. They need to go on, and either they need to listen with you or they need to go, okay? And I'd like to just introduce you to Miss Mary Crimes. And she's amazing. She's got a story for you that I think will resonate with some of you. Hi, Mary. Thank you for being here.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, with as I said, we're talking about perseverance. And when we talk prior to our recording today, you share with me a story that had taken place during your life that goes back to when you were a little girl. And I thought it was something that our listeners could benefit from, because so many of us are dealing with loss and just finding the strength to move past and move through that loss. And so I was like, yep, she got it. She's going to push us through into the new year. Tell me a little bit about your mom and your dad and your life growing up as a little girl.
Well, I didn't realize it then, but I realized it as I got older that my parents were kind of, I would say, old for that era. You know, in the 50s, my mother was 37 when she had me. My dad was 20 years older than her, you know. So being born in that era to older parents who were, I would say, illiterate, because one went to the third grade, one went to the sixth grade, whatever that meant back in that in those days, you know. So I kind of like a little disadvantage just from conception, you know. But I remember my mother being a very loving mom, you know. Remember my head in her lap as she braided my hair when I first day of kindergarten. You know, my dad was a little more, you know, he was kind of laid back, a little more stoic, I would say. My mom was a disciplinarian, you know. My dad was not, you know, that wasn't his thing. That wasn't his job, I guess, you know, and she was pretty disciplinarianist, you know. We couldn't do too many things. You couldn't say certain things in the house, couldn't say the word lie. You had to use story.
Oh, I mean, boy. You know, yeah. Telling stories.
Yes, you could not say lie. That was a bad word, you know. And I also remember getting drunk when I was about 11, 12 years old. My mother beat me. Oh my gosh. She would have been called on for child abuse at that. And I never drank Swiss up again. Okay. So.
How did you get your hands on? What you got your hands on at 11?
Oh, maybe 12, you know, but yeah, well, back then, you know, you had older folks that you hung out with, you know. Right. My sister was a couple of years older, so you were able to get, you know, do certain things, get away with certain things. Somebody else would go in the liquor store for you and, you know, go buy the beer for you. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so your mom, she was a very, very significant part of your life. But you lost her at an early age.
Yes. Very early.
What happened? Yeah. What happened to your mom?
Well, my mom died of breast cancer. At that time, I didn't realize or didn't know what was going on. That was a big hush-hush, you know, the C word. You couldn't say it out loud. So we never actually knew what my mother had. But I remember years before coming from camp, and one time she turned around without her bra, and I saw the scar where her breast was supposed to be. And it traumatized me because I didn't know what that was, you know, and I couldn't ask. You know, you weren't allowed to ask those kind of questions back then. I wasn't even supposed to see it, you know. I remember that. And then I remember after her passing, you know, when they started talking about breast cancer, you know, she died of breast cancer, And I remember that scar, and I remember that probably, that not probably, that's what that was. And the cancer probably metastasized within that next 5 years, because at that time, that was the 5 year range. Right. You know, if you don't make it past 5 years, you know, it's just a done deal. You know, so, but losing a mom at 13 years, I can't even describe what that felt like, Joanna. I can't describe it. And at that time, my father, like I said, he was 20 years older than my mom. She was only 50 years old when she died. You know, and my dad was 69, almost 70 years old. And he had two teenage daughters.
Right.
One was 13. My sister was going to be, was going on 16 that year. And, you know, like I said, she was the disciplinarian. So after that,
how did he, what happened? So things just kind of went haywire, I imagine, after that.
Yes. I started running the streets, hanging out in the streets, you know, at the age of 13, you know, found friends that, you know, were kind of sort of like me. And we all kind of came together and hung out together. My father really didn't have any control over me. He, you know, I did basically what I wanted to do. I was out all night. Sometimes he would come out looking for me, but, you know, I was wherever, you know. Right. But I have found out from people that, oh, your father was looking for you. You know, okay. You know, and it just, I kind of just went off the rails, you know, three different junior high schools.
You were getting expelled and kicked out of school.
Finally went to what they called the 600 school back then, which was a school for, you know, unruly children.
Okay.
So I wound up in the 600 school, but I was smart. You know, my thing was I used to get bored. I had attention deficit disorder, which was undiagnosed, you know, throughout my life. So if you have to keep me intrigued, you know, I was one of them children, you have to keep me intrigued. If I get bored, that's it. I'm up, I'm out, I'm drawing, doodling, doing whatever, but I am not paying attention to you any longer.
I can relate.
You know, I have a little more control over it now that I know what it is. And, you know, I can kind of control myself and do things that I need to do to keep me focused. But back then, I had no idea what that was, you know. And I wound up using drugs. I started using drugs at the age of 14. I started sniffing heroin, me and a couple of my friends. You know, we took our first little sniff and, oh, boy, from there. You know, that was kind of all downhill all the way. Went from that to what you call skin popping. And then I finally went to intravenous drug use, mainline. My sister and I were both on drugs. You know, one time my father walked in because I was giving my sister the shot. And my father walked in the room. Oof.
Oh, my.
The man shook his head, turned around and said, y'all are two good bleeps gone to waste. And, you know, at that time, I felt it, but it was like, you know, okay, oh, well.
Whatever,
but,
then.
You know, right. Later on in life, when I can hear him and I can see the hurt and pain on his face, you know, it's like, wow. You know, wow. I did that to my dad. You know, I did that. But at that time, like I said, I was off to the races.
And he didn't really know how to manage it. And, of course, there was but no support for him either.
No, not really. I had a couple of, well, older cousins that, you know, I used to call my aunts, but my two aunts were party girls. Okay. They didn't really have that kind of time to, you know, they did what they could. I did go up and stay in the Bronx with one of my aunts. But I wound up getting pregnant up there. So it's like, I was still, you know, didn't matter. I did what I wanted to do.
How old were you then when you got pregnant?
I was 15 when I got pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're 15 years old, pregnant, no mom. How did you figure out, what was the turning point, I guess I should say is my question. What was the turning point? Because once you have a baby and you bring the baby into the world, life gets harder.
Yes.
It gets harder and it becomes even more difficult to turn your life around and make a positive change because you're a child yourself, so you haven't figured out things for yourself, right? And then you have someone else that you have to take care of. How did you turn your life around? At what point?
Oh, that came much later. I did have the baby at the age of 16. And I was able to manage for a minute there, but like I said, with once it's like, okay, I gotta stay home now, I have to do this, and I have to be responsible. I'm 16 years old, I don't know what I'm doing, or I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing here. And I was running the streets. My father would have the baby as much as possible. I was running the streets. I had a boyfriend who was using drugs, and we were running the streets together. And he was actually abusive. I got my arm broken. I've gotten my teeth knocked out. I've been choked within an inch of my life on a few occasions. But I was in love with Alan, and I would want to be with Alan. So I wound up doing what Alan did, which was robbing people. And, I wound up going to jail, at the age of 16. And no, I'm sorry, that was at the age of 17. And while I was in jail, my son was in the hospital because he had managed to open up a bottle of Tylenol. It's Tylenol or aspirin. I can't remember what it was. I didn't know what he ingested, so I did take him to the hospital. But in the interim, that was, sorry to say, that was a break for me. I was like, okay, I didn't have to take care of him. He wasn't there. I didn't have to worry about him being there. And he wound up being taken, from my custody while I was in jail. And after that, even though I know I wanted to get my son back, oh, I'm a terrible mother, and oh my goodness, he wound up in the system in foster care, and he wound up being adopted, So after I came home from jail, it didn't really resonate with me, okay, what this is. So I got arrested a second time, and I wound up going to what they called it back then, the Rockefeller program. And I was sentenced one day before my 18th birthday, so I didn't have a record. I was listed as a youthful offender, so my records were sealed, which was okay, a good thing. After that, like I said, just still out there, pillar to post, homeless. I was actually homeless as a teenager. And Phoenix House. At that time, Phoenix House had what they called the recruitment team. They would have people come out, look for folks in the neighborhood, and see if they can get somebody to come into the program. And I was sitting in not Prospect Park, Tompkins Square Park on the Lower East Side, nodding. I mean, I was, and the fella that I was dealing with at the time, he wanted me to stop drugs so bad, but it was like, oh well. He stopped them and said, "Can you please, please help this moment of mine?" And they came over and started talking to me. "Oh yeah, we're from Phoenix House, and we heard that you're there." And I looked up at him. Oh God, I want to kill him. "How dare you call these people on me? I don't need to be going no Phoenix House." Oh God, but I said something, Joanna, I don't know what it was, but something just clicked and said, "Just go." It's like that was my address. Tompkins Square Park was my address. I was homeless, So it's like, okay, get up off the bench and go and see what happens. And I wound up going into Phoenix House at the age of 22. And I never looked back. Once I got in there, you talk about tough. That was some tough love. That was a tough program to go through at that time. The discipline was, I scrubbed the fire escape with a toothbrush, okay,
Really?
with a sign around my neck. Now it could be considered, you would think,
Right now,
this is like a cult, oh my gosh, but
yeah.
for me it worked, because I didn't ever want to go through that again. I
Right.
don't want to go back to Phoenix House. I don't want to go back to Tompkins Square Park. So I have to move forward. I have to keep my wits about me. I have to stay here until I can get out of here and move into my own place and do, the things, I guess, I don't know, should have been done. I lost some time there. Thank God, not that much, I have to say.
Well, as I'm sure during that time, a lot of people, and a couple that I know personally OD. There was a lot of ODing on heroin. So I want to just, you're here. You are here.
And you know what's funny? I have to interject this, because if we found somebody that OD'd on one of the soups, the first thing you ask, where did he cop at? You know, not like, oh my God, this guy, poor guy. Yeah, where did he cop at? Where did he cop at? You know, that was the madness of the drug life, you know?
Yeah. Absolute
madness.
So you're 22 at Phoenix House, which, by the way, this place has been around, I don't know how long, but they've been around a long, long time. I've had family members that actually work for them at certain points in their career as nurses. While you're there, and what happens next? You decide you're going to leave there. Is it all easy once you leave there?
Oh, no.
What happened
was the drugs was out of the picture, you know, so that was like a big part of it, because when you're getting high, you can't think about anything else. So that was out of the picture. I knew that I didn't want to do that again.
Okay. You know?
However, when I left there, I moved out with a gentleman that was a part of the program. They used to allow you to have relationships in there. So we had this relationship, we moving out together. And a couple of years in with him, he started using again, you know? You know, so it was, that devastated me, you know, because I just knew this was the life now. I'm out, we're out together, we're doing this and we're doing that. And, you know, we're gonna make this home and, you know, loved his family loved me, you know, it was like a wonderful thing. Then I found out that he was using again, you know, so kind of went downhill from there. His name was on the lease, more or less. So I had to move out from where we were. And once again, I was kind of almost pillar to post again, staying with neighbors, you know, here and there. And at the age of, 32, 31, I finally was, finally moved into an apartment. And my name was the only name on the lease.
That feels so good, doesn't it?
Oh, gosh. Yes, it did.
Yes.
Oh, yes. I finally got it, you know, me, you know.
So you also then went into a career. You found a career that fulfilled you as well throughout this process, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. Since I was 5 years old, I wanted to be a nurse. I can't even think of anything else I wanted to do. I used to get the nurse kits every year for Christmas, you know.
Oh, yes.
And one year my neighbor bought me one and my parents bought me one. I was in nurse's heaven. I think I was like about 6 or 7 years old. But I always wanted to be a nurse. And while I was in Phoenix House, I was kind of misled. They told me because of my drug history and I was in jail and blah, 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 you could not become a nurse and not going to allow you to be licensed by the state. And I kind of ran with this for a while until a couple of jobs I had when I found out, you know, that was absolutely not true. So I investigated a little further. And like I said, I had a sealed record. So my record was not even, is non-existent, you know?
Right.
And so I started the process to go to nursing school, you know, during that process, I had a couple of setbacks. I didn't go all the way to the RN, but I managed to get my LPN, you know, license. And I started working and wound up, went for an interview at Rikers Island. And the nursing director, you know, it's a story. I was her first interview of the day. She sat there, she told me, she said, you know, I never, ever hire my first interview of the day. She said, but something about you. She said, I just feel something about you. My instinct is telling me to go with you. So I'm going to give you a shot. But she said, one condition. I was like, what, crawling rice grains? Okay, I'll do it. You know? She said, you must go back to school to get your RN. I was like, okay, Ms. Jones, I promise I will do that. And I was able to keep that promise, you know, so wound up getting an RN. It was like, you know,
so you had a long career as a nurse.
Yes.
Beautiful.
30 years. Yeah.
30 years as a nurse. after all of that you've been through, you got your dream that you had since you were a little girl. I think that's beautiful.
Yes.
I think that's beautiful. Now, I want to tell everybody that's listening and watching that I met Mary partying.
Tambourine in hand.
Was out there dancing. I met her at Felix Hernandez, one of his parties, and I saw her and I just thought she was so graceful and so beautiful with that tambourine. She was just shaking that tambourine, having a great time. And I just, you know, I've never done that before. Usually when I find a guest, it's, you know, somebody I know or somebody introduces me to someone. But I just walked up to you and said, listen, you got to be on it. You have got to be on it. And I wish I had some video of you dancing so I can show people what you are doing on that dance floor, because Mary don't play on the floor. Okay. So I want you to talk a little bit about keeping yourself active and moving around. I mean, what motivates you to do that? Because I, unfortunately, you know, really have been kind of slow getting on this. I'm gonna be honest. I like to go dancing, as you know, but in terms of like being dedicated to exercising on a regular basis a few times a week, I'm really just getting into that consistently, I would say, this year. And I have seen so many benefits to my mental health, my physical health, just the things that were hurting me don't hurt anymore. You know what I mean? Just with the movement. So can you tell us how to keep motivated? Because there are days, I'm going to tell you the truth, I don't want to do the exercises.
Oh my goodness. I understand that. My thing is I need to be in a disciplined setting. I'm the one of those folks, no, I might do it once or twice at home. I'm not doing it at home. And I know this about myself, you know, so I have been looking for an exercise class that was suitable for me, because I do have arthritis in the knee. So I have a problem with my knee. So I was looking for something that was not too strenuous, you know, and I found one of my friends sent me the flyer for a senior class. It's mostly seniors, but it's like a chair exercise. She uses the chair. We use balls to squeeze and do different things, a rope, the tension rope to pull, and walking around the room using weights. So there's this, she does a lot of different things, but you actually do work up a sweat. It's not your normal, you know, sit there and just head to one side and, you know, no, you are moving. You know, this young lady keeps you moving. Her name is Nakisha Smith. She keeps you moving, and she does a lot of different levels of exercise classes. But this one is the one for me. So I've been going and doing that. But, you know, prior to that, I love dancing. So whenever there's an opportunity to go dance, you know, like during the summertime, there was every Thursday vinyl nights. And during Saturdays, the Ace Hotel, they were doing vinyl nights. So I get an opportunity to go dance.
Yes. Shout out to Miss DJ Misbehavior. Yes.
Her and the crew. So you know, during the summertime, I did a lot of outdoor events. And so I was dancing at least 2-3 times a week. You know, that slowed down because now it's cold. But now I'm doing the exercise class 2 days a week, which I'm enjoying. Once it's over, it's like, woo, I'm sweating. And, you know, it's like, whoa, and smiling because I am sweating, you know. So,
Yeah. Well, I think you have inspired me greatly to keep going, because when I talked to you on Monday and we were talking, and I saw the stair, I have one of those steppers. If stepper was looking at me, and you were talking about going to your class, I said, well, you know what? Let me just go on and get it in. And I just went on ahead and do it. And you feel so good afterwards. I just don't know why the hesitancy to do it is such a problem. But You definitely got me off my behind on Monday. And I thank you.
That's good.
I thank you so much for that. And I thank you even more for being here and for sharing your story with us today. And I'm going to join you at that class. And we're going to have some fun. Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll have you back. Maybe I'll get you back. Maybe we'll be recording you.
I told you I'm not an episode. I am a series.
Yes, you did tell me that. Yes, you did. Thank you so much, Mary, for being here.
Thank you for having me, Joanna.
Enjoy speaking with you so much. Have a great one.
You do the same.
Okay. Bye-bye.